Welcome to the Eat the Evidence podcast, a show for cake and cookie decorators and sugar artists of all kinds. I'm your host, Kimberly Chapman, and today I'm joined by Michelle Green from The Business of Baking to talk about not just decorating, but the marketing, social media, and PR side of our industry. Also, Shannon Orr of 1211 Bakery went to the Oklahoma Sugar Arts Show a few weeks ago and recorded several mini interviews with people attending that show. So whether you're frantically putting together your entry for the next big cake show, as I am, working on a client cake, or on your way to deliver that awesome piece of edible art, let's get this show started to keep you going with your flow. Joining me now is Michelle Green from The Business of Baking. She's a chef, cake decorator, writer, motivational speaker, teacher, and podcaster who used to run her own cake business but now travels the world helping other people set up theirs. Welcome, Michelle.
Thanks so much, Kim. Thanks for having me. But I should say that I'm now consider myself a recovering cake decorator. It's been a couple of years since I've even bought a toy, which I feel like is truly how I know the recovery has taken place now.
Oh, my. It's been like a few days since I bought something.
wait, let me clarify. I have bought toys, just not of the cake variety.
Oh, yes. Do you have toys unique to your new sort of vocation of the motivational speaking?
Oh, well, now I have like technology toys and like video toys and podcasting toys and all kinds of things. But I haven't bought any cake things in quite a while. Doesn't mean I'm not tempted, by the way. Like, I see cool stuff online. I'm like, I totally need that thing. And I'm like, why do I need that thing? I don't need that thing. Step away from the online cart.
Sometimes that happens to us, even if we are still doing cakes. I love tools, but there's sometimes like, do you really need another version of that tool or do you just want it?
Yeah, I know. I'm all for treat yourself, but sometimes I think with cake, and in fact, just like decorating toys in general, I'm sure the cookie people have the same issue that, you know, there's treat yourself and then there's like be homeless because all you own is cutting cookie cutters.
Are you saying I could not construct a fort out of all of my cookie cutters and sugar shapers and lace mats? I could build
a
lovely fort.
Well, I'm saying you probably could, but I don't know how your family will feel about that. And also, I don't know about the whole weatherproofing part of that.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, even the silicone lace mats, I don't think they're really going to keep the wind out.
And also, like, what are you going to do, sew those suckers together? How is that going to work?
Yeah, I don't know. See, someone needs to invent a technique for that. Or, yeah, we could just have less stuff. I have friends who are experts in, I mean, I think of Debbie Gord. She's an expert in having the same tools that she's had for 20 years and doesn't, you know, splurge on new ones and just makes the awesomeness that, I mean, she's Debbie Gord, makes the awesomeness that she makes without having to get into all that stuff.
All hail Queen Debbie!
Oh, she's unbelievable. Man, that girl is, she's like secretly a magician.
I can call your wizard. I'm like, sometimes she posts a cake and I'm like, sorcery! Don't know that this is real!
Yeah, she is very amazing. There's a few people in our industry like that who I just look at them and I think, oh my goodness, like there is a direct line from your hands to just like, I'm not religious, but like, you know, I don't know, God or some higher power, because I have no idea how you created that out of actual edible food. How does that work?
Yeah,
just,
I know, yeah.
Sorcery.
Constantly. My daughter just had her birthday, and she's just turned 12, and she made herself a TARDIS cake, and it was pretty good. And I posted it on Facebook, and all these other cake decorator people were like, wow, good job, and I couldn't do that at 12 years old. And so I told her, I said, look, all these people who are very talented and very skilled saying your cake is good. And she said, yeah, but it's, you know, it's not quite up to Debbie Gord's level. And I'm like, Debbie Gord isn't 12 years old. Like, you can lower your bar a little bit, kiddo.
How about we have a little bit of perspective here? How about that? Yeah. Although I will say that my own kids claim that I've totally turned them into cake snobs. Like when they go to parties and stuff, they will send me photos like, will you look at this abomination? Or if they go to like a cafe or something, they're like, yeah, my mom could do that better. So they've become mega cake snobs now. They just will not eat any cake anymore. It has to like meet their ridiculous standards, which by the way, I've never said because I'm quite happy to eat the odd supermarket cake.
Yeah.
But they've become cake snobs, I have to say. Oh no, this is like the confession hour. I just confess that I don't mind eating a supermarket cake now and again.
I don't mind eating, as long as it's good quality cake.
Don't tell anyone my secrets.
Okay. Don't worry. All, you know, a few hundred listeners that we have will not know. They won't tell. But yeah, I mean, I've had other moms
freak out when I bring my daughter to, you know, their kid's party that, like, they're apologizing to me for their cake. And I'm like, are you kidding? It's awesome. Look what you did. Like, you're not a pro decorator. You have a full-time job, or you do, you know, you make quilts, or you do these other things. But look, you made this cake and it is amazing. And so, like, I find very specific things to praise about it. Look at your clean lines. You did these stripes really well. You made an adorable figure. I find things very specifically that I can praise because they feel so intimidated. It's like, I'm not putting that on you. I'm not judging you.
Yeah, I think they feel the pressure themselves. Like, my friends often say to me, because I've trained as a chef, they're always like, I never want to invite you for dinner because I feel like whatever I serve you will just, like, I'll feel terrible about it. And my thing to that is always like, you know, my favorite thing to eat at a friend's house is something I have not cooked.
Yeah, I know,
so,
right?
Really, if you want it to be like grilled cheese and tomato soup, I am good with that because I haven't cooked it. So therefore, this is a gourmet meal.
That's
so,
right.
You know, this makes me happy. Often friends will be like, I'm never cooking for you. I'm like, no, please cook for me. I just want somebody else to do it around here once in a while.
It's like, this is the deliciousness of a pan I don't have to wash.
Exactly right. And you know, the sad thing is that I'm a little bit of a, on the one hand, I am a total food snob. Like, I like fancy cheese and expensive chocolate and whatever. But on the other hand, like, my favorite meal is, like, Cheetos and a Slurpee.
So, like, you're
a
normal person.
I am good with whatever comes as long as it's edible, really.
I used to be in tech journalism in the dot-com boom. You know, we'd be invited to an event in another city, very prestigious. Like, all the, you know, the big IT names, some of which don't even exist anymore. But I did networking, so it was the Novells and, you know, Tarantella and all that kind of stuff, which most of our listeners won't even heard of. But I would be invited to these big events, and we had PR managers who, you know, got us off and on our flights and all this stuff. It was very managed. It was very showy with the money because it was the dot-com boom. And they would really like to make an example of how much money they could spend. They took us to the fanciest restaurants and the nicest places. I mean, one time we got taken to the Rainbow Room at Rockefeller Center, and Carol Channing was four tables away. It was like, I'm just sitting there going, yeah, but, you know, you could take me to McDonald's and it's okay. Like, I'm a cheap date.
You know, secretly, all those PR people, they themselves are eating McDonald's on the way home.
Exactly. There was one I worked with a lot because she happened to represent four or five clients that were on my beat. We would see each other at multiple things, so, you know, which makes it an interesting dynamic, because once she's representing one company and now she's representing something else, which isn't directly a competitor, but, you know, it's not the same company, so we could be a little bit more candid with each other. And one time I just said to her, I'm like, you know what, I am a cheap date. You do not need to work to impress me. And she's like, could we go to Arby's? I haven't had Arby's in 2 months. I'm like, I haven't had Arby's in a year. Yeah, let's go to Arby's. So,
and there, see, these are the things on which friendships are forged, Ken. This is it, right? These are the things on which friendship and love are formed, for sure.
Exactly.
A mutual love affair of junky food, right?
That's right. That's right. Because I'm just really not a judgy person in terms of anyone's food, anyone's cake. You know, I mean, I like teaching beginners. I like teaching people who don't know anything about cake. Kids or beginners come to it and go, you know, sometimes fearfully, sometimes not fearfully, and I have to manage them differently. I like them to come in the room and go, show me how to do something cool. And when they're happy when they leave, and it's not, you know, a perfect master's level thing, but they're happy, that is my joy. That is where I find my cake joy.
So let me just wade right into the controversial waters here, apropos of being judgy, and say that one of the things I dislike about our industry, and there's not many things, but one of the things I dislike is how awful we are to each other when it comes to things like the great bait of box mix versus scratch mix. And like this morning I interviewed Belle from Stencyville, and she was saying how she actually gets like quite a lot of negative people telling her that stenciling a cookie is cheating and stuff, like this, this sort of stuff. And every time I get a lot of emails, the nature of what I do is I get a lot of emails going, you know, Michelle, is it okay if I use box mix, and is it okay if I use royal icing mix, and is it okay if I this, and okay if I that? And my answer to all of it is like, you know what? Whatever works for you, man. I'm not here to pass judgment on one or another. And I think that if you are somebody whose customers enjoy box mix and you're happy and proud to make it, then go for it. If you're somebody who customers prefer something else, or even if those customers are, you know, like I know that you do a lot of charity work and stuff, then go for it. Like, who are we to say that one way is better than another way if the ultimate result ends up in the happiness of the person at the receiving end, you know?
Exactly.
I've never really understood that. I've never understood why we make each other feel awful for our choices when we're not each other's end user, you know, like, exactly, the people, like, you're not providing that cake to the cake maker down the road, you're providing it to a 5-year-old or to a charity or to whatever, and their happiness is actually what matters more than that person down the road who's giving you grief over using box mix, you know. So I don't understand that bashing thing. I must admit, I'm a little bit like, what? Why are we arguing about this?
Yeah,
why
I mean, is it's even one a thing, topic? It's one thing if it's a if it's an actual competition, right? I mean, like, that's judging. Literally, that's what you go for. Is to you here is my entry. Now judge it. And I'm often distinguishing between that and the catering to the 5-year-olds. And one of the things I keep repeating is never. In all the years that I've been doing this, never has a small child come up to me and said, I cannot eat this cupcake, for it is inexpertly piped.
Or they're like, I can taste the E number in this.
That's right, yes.
Like, you know, you never hear it from the person at the end.
No.
Like, it's such silliness. I think sometimes our industry is just, oh, people stir up. What's that? There's a very American expression, like, they stir up the hornet's nest or whatever.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I don't get it. I especially love these emails where people ask me, like, my opinion. I'm like, when did I become the great Swami of box mix versus not box mix? I actually had this one lady who emailed me that very question, and I wrote back to her, and I essentially said that, like, you've got to do what works for you. And she kind of came back and went, yes, but which do you like? And I said, well, I'm not your customer, so which I like is irrelevant. Yes, but which do you? And this email went off. Like, I kept getting a couple of them. And in the end, I said to her, well, here's my thing. If somebody put a box mix cake in front of me, I'd eat it. If somebody put a non-box mix cake in front of me, I'd also eat it. So I'm not exactly the most discerning customer, and she just did not like that answer. Like, she obviously had a point of view that she desperately wanted me to agree with, but I couldn't, because I think there's a time and place for both. So, yeah, but she kept going for a while until eventually I was like, you need to stop that now. We're done. This conversation's over. Right?
I was listening to one of your episodes last night. You were saying how embarrassed you were to have bought the sheet cake, the banana sheet cake, and I'm like, seems totally legit to me to buy the cake. I have seen in Cake Masters magazine, there's a company that advertises that specific service specifically for cake decorators. So that is totally legit. You were totally allowed to do that. I absolve you.
You know, the only thing, okay, so you know how many people have mentioned that banana cake to me? Like, a lot. I've never told that story before, and I think that story sticks in people's minds. But I need to differentiate the fact that, so here in Australia, it's not uncommon to buy undecorated cake from bakeries for the purpose of cake decorating. There are whole companies that exist here specifically for that purpose. And in fact, my bakery did that too. We made thousands of dollars a month off making naked cakes that other decorators would then pick up and do the decoration on. But I think perhaps in the banana cake story, what made that slightly dodgier is that that company didn't do that. Like, that wasn't their thing. I had to, like, scrape icing off at work, which is, like, so embarrassing. So had that been a company that just sold naked cake for the purpose of other decorators, you know, decorating it, that would have been legit and, like, not even worthy of shooting in the podcast. But the fact is, I bought it from a company as, like, a finished product and then unfinished it and refinished it. So, yeah. I'm going down into the pit of hell, really, with this kind of thing. But it was only the one time.
I think
it's my redemption
fine.
Years. I only did it the one time.
You were totally allowed. I don't think anyone would hold that against you. Again, you delivered what the client wanted, and the client was happy.
Well, 100%. And, you know, the funny thing, that particular episode is where I confess a whole bunch of really stupid things I did at the beginning of my business. And the best part of that episode is I spent the entire time pretty much cackling in my own stupidity and going, you know what? It got me where I needed to go, and that's all that matters. But now that I think about it, I'm like, oh, man. Possibly I made some poor choices back then.
You should tell the story fully, but again, I absolve you. I think you can take orders sitting at the side of the road in your car. I think that was legit.
When the car blows up and is, like, under the hood is smoking. Yeah, that's a great idea. You know, even when I think about it now, like, some of the stuff I've done over the course of my various careers, I'm like, man, you know, if nothing else, I'm going to die knowing I was the chick who got stuff done, right? Like, actually, I often joke that, like, on my headstone, it's going to say, well, seemed like a good idea at the time.
Now, here's Eat the Evidence correspondent Shannon Orr of 1211 Bakery reporting from the Oklahoma Sugar Arts Show.
Okay, this is Shannon with Eat the Evidence podcast, filling in for Kim way out in Texas. I'm here with Jean,
a shop of all,
and I'm going to ask her 5 random questions. So first, can you tell me, What is your favorite thing about the Oklahoma Sugar Art Competition?
Seeing all my friends.
All your friends?
Yep. That's what I look forward to every year.
What's your favorite competition part? Like, which division?
Division?
Yeah.
Novelty.
Novelty? Why?
It's very interesting to see what people do, what they bring in. You never know year after year. You don't know who's going to come. So I like to be surprised.
Dogs or cats?
Cats.
Tea or coffee?
Neither.
Oh, my God.
Orange juice.
Orange juice. Okay, that was my 5 random questions with Jean. Cool. Thank you, Jean.
You're welcome.
You have fun and good luck.
Thanks. You too. All right.
I talk about this so much, but I'm obsessed with the podcast. So NPR have a podcast called How I Built This.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but I highly recommend it. The host speaks to people who are starting, have started a business. And he talks to them about, like, from the very beginning, like, all the way to the very end. And it's kind of refreshing and reassuring to hear, like, big companies like Kate Spade and, like, Reddit and, like, God, who else? Like, the Spanx lady and, you know, Angie's List and, like, all these huge companies. And their stories all begin with stuff like, yeah, so I bought 300 bolts of fabric and then it like was living in my mom's garage. And then I was like selling handbags on street corners. And then I was like, you know, doing this and I was doing that and I was doing the other. And I lied to this person to get that thing. And I, you know, the stories they tell are often just unbelievably amazing. But we all started out, right? If, you know, at the beginning, you don't have the money or the time or even the knowledge to do things the right way. You just do it the any way you can to get where you're going, and then you carry on, you know?
I mean, that's how so many people get started in cake, is putting some icing together in a creative way, whether you do it from a template or your own head or whatever, and you put it together and someone goes, oh, that's kind of cute. And then you think, I'm going to do that again, and you get better. And we all look back at our original cakes and go, yee, but they were good at the time because that was what our skill level produced.
Oh, at the time, they were fantastic. And yeah, we thought we were a complete rock star. We thought we were amazing. But like, I am the greatest thing since sliced bread. Look at me. I got all this going on, you know? So for sure. I mean, I've never looked at my early cakes and gone, oh, that was terrible. I've looked at them and gone, wow, what was I thinking? Purple and red do not go together, but okay.
Yeah, I tend to look at my early ones and go, oh, that needed support. I didn't know about structure back then.
That's a lesson you only learn once, though. Like, yeah, you only need to learn that one once. And then you go, possibly.
I had a cake fall over that did have support in it, but I'd skimped on the support. I mean, it was totally my fault. And it was super embarrassing. It was a free cake for my kids' school. So it's not like, you know, anyone had paid for it. The kids thought it was awesome that it fell over. And everyone who was horrified was just horrified for me. Like, nobody was mad. Nobody was upset. And then as we're handing out, like, the now, you know, chunks, I mean, it fell over on the table. So it's not like, it was perfectly still edible. And so as we're handing out the chunks of cake, everyone's like, but it's delicious. And I'm like, yep, falling over cake, still tasty.
Yeah, well, there was nothing's changed about it other than it's a little messier now.
Yep. And it was so tempting to, because I hate being wrong. Like anyone does, but like I passionately hate being wrong. So I always challenge myself when I'm wrong to suck it up and talk about how wrong I was, like the mature person I am pretending to be. And so I blogged it. I blogged why, and I called it The Anatomy of a Cake Disaster. And I explained precisely where I'd gotten lazy with the structure and why that failed and why you shouldn't do that. Because hopefully someone else can learn and go, ooh, look, that fell over. And people sometimes come onto that post and insult me. And it's like, all right, if that's all you're taking away from this, that's fine. Yeah.
What does anyone sell you? The fact that you owned up that you made a mistake, and then you also talk about how to fix it. Wow. What is there to hate on that?
Because there are awful people on the internet, basically. Right. I mean, I don't keep the comments. I take those comments up. It's moderated comments, right? So no one, they never see the light of day. But I have a couple pages where people thank me all the time because it's like a tutorial that people love. And those are the ones that get most of the comments. Most of my blog posts, I know people read them because they tell me about them, but they don't comment, which is so frustrating. But okay, whatever. But that one has, it's like probably like in the top 10 in terms of getting comments. And most of them are trolls. So
that is unbelievable to me. Oh my God. I mean, well, sadly, it is actually believable, but like,
it's entirely believable. I've been a loud feminist on the internet since like the 1990s. I am so, like, someone coming going, this cake is terrible, is like, really? That is not even the harshest insult I've had in the last half hour.
Do you have like 6-inch thick skin by now?
Oh, yeah. I have been an activist, feminist, you know, anti-war activist, all this stuff for decades online. I have received threats I cannot even speak of in keeping, you know, with the safety of, you know, our listening audience. And I haven't even been doxxed. I haven't even had, like, some of what the big Twitter feminists have had. But I have had nasty, brutal nonsense thrown at me. So, yeah, someone going, your cake is ugly, is like, okay, it's Thursday, whatever.
Like, show me what you've really got, right? Like, is that all you have to say? Okay, moving on now.
Yeah.
You know what's funny? It's like, the business of baking is my second blog, but my first blog was just a family, like, for lack of a better term, mom blog, although I hate that expression. Mm-hmm. It was just kind of like documenting our lives and me going to culinary school and stuff. And at the time, like, people were big, and like commenting was a big thing on blogs. Like, you know, a lot of the fun stuff like happened in the comments, but it was good, useful, interesting commentary. And it feels like in the last couple of years, people still comment, but only trolls comment. Like, all the normal good people like read the article and walk away.
Yeah, or they talk about it on Facebook. So, like, what happens to me is I'll share a blog post, and I have a good conversation on G+ and on Facebook, and maybe even a couple of tweet replies. But none of them are going to the actual blog and saying anything, which is why I make a point of when I see my friend has posted their blog to Facebook, I comment there, and then I go to their blog and leave a comment, because it just feels so nice to get a comment on your blog.
It does feel nice, and it is very, very rare these days. That is absolutely true. Like,
yeah.
Super rare, unless you're, like, giving something away or whatever. The nature of people communicating has just changed a little bit over time. You know, when I started my blog, I had lots of comments, and mm-hmm. now it's like crickets. You know, I get comments, but it's like probably one every 2 weeks as opposed to several a day or whatever.
Yeah, the bulk of the ones I get are the ones that are spam, that are trying to not look like spam, the ones that are like, this article, very interesting, it, what my coworkers just talk about, I will be coming back for more, and then a URL that's like, you know, scammyrealestate.com.
Are so weird. I get a lot of those on the blog. It's funny, I use a spam filter now, and that thing catches, like, I don't know, some crazy amount, like 1,000 a week or something.
Yeah.
Some insane number.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, like, who has got the time to be doing all this? Obviously enough of them, but yeah.
Well, I think they're bots.
Scammyrealestate.com, so true.
It is. Well, and then because they're all bots, they do get choked up in the spam filter eventually. So yeah, every once in a while I look at my WordPress spam filter and I'm like, whoa, 1,200. Like...
Yeah, I don't look at it too often because it, like, scares me. So just every once in a while, I'll kind of peek in there. I'm like, ooh, that's a big number. Moving on now.
Yeah, but some of them still get through until they get – I mean, that's why, you know, when you go through and if you market it spam, you're teaching your spam filter to market as spam. But the bots are and their programmers are good at finding just enough language that your spam filter isn't – it's an escalating – constantly escalating war, right, on both sides.
Yep, sure is. Sure is. I recently explaining to my mom about this, that every time she gets spam and she clicks the unsubscribe button, she's telling them that it's a real address.
That's right.
So
don't do that.
I was like, Mom, you need to just click block, don't reply. And she's like, oh, is that why I'm suddenly getting like 10 times as much?
Yep.
Oh my god. So we had to have a lesson in Mom, this is how you block, you don't unsubscribe. If you've never heard of Viagra Cialis, right, then do not click unsubscribe, because the chances are, as a 70-something-year-old woman, you probably didn't subscribe to that in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, and it's hard enough to get off a legit thing, because I used to do my blog in Austin, and I was a cake decorator in Austin, and I was part of the Austin bloggers group. I ended up on all these PR lists, and now I live here in Cambridge in the UK, and I'm still getting, you know, we have a new chef at our restaurant, come to our launch this Saturday at, you know, somewhere on, you know, 6th Street in Austin. I'm like, can't, sorry, unsubscribe, please.
That's a serious date night.
yeah, like, we're just going to have a 2-hour drive to Heathrow and then a 10-hour flight.
But we're gonna make it for that PR dinner.
Well, because I'm gonna get a free drink if I come, so, you know, I don't even drink, but that free drink that I won't even drink will totally make that 800-pound flight worthwhile.
Absolutely. What do you mean? I can't believe you're not doing it right now. Like, why are you talking to me when you could be flying to Austin to have a free drink?
Right. But at least that is a legitimate PR list I've been on with a human. So when I say, oh, I've moved to the UK, then they're usually like a human responds, oh, okay, sorry to see you go, or whatever. But then there are those other sort of quasi PR-y things where it's like, I don't know how I got on this list. And you can tell they're lying when they come to you and they say, well, I've been reading your blog and I love its content, so I'd like to you know, get an article about our new chili tequila mixer. And it's like, my blog has two, other than cake decorating, the two main themes on my blog are I'm allergic to hot spices and I don't do alcohol. So the number of Texas-based companies that market spicy alcohol to me and claim they've read my blog, I'm like, no, you didn't. No, you don't.
Like the two main things that are like, that's not right. You. That's hilarious.
Yeah, and they're almost never cake decorating stuff. I mean, I'd love people. I mean, I have some friends who make tools and occasionally will send me a free tool to review or whatever. And I do. They know I'll be honest. So, you know, that's, I don't lie. I won't post it if it's not honest. But I almost never get like cake related PR stuff. It's all the restaurants and bars and canned habaneros.
Here's my thing about that. So here is my thing about that whole cake slash marketing slash PR slash thing. Our industry as a whole is really late to the party.
Yeah.
Like really late to the party. So I did some work for another company. I don't know if I'm allowed to mention them, so I won't. But basically, I was working with them on a marketing thing. And I'm like, look, let's contact these companies and see if they want to help us with our event and blah, blah. And we did that. And like those companies, like big names in our industry, you know, could not cope with this concept of digital marketing, could not cope with this concept of like creating video content, could not cope with this concept of like, you know, sponsored posts or whatever. And it wasn't that long ago. I'm talking 18 months. And they were all kind of like, but if it's not an ad in a magazine, how does that work?
Yeah.
I was like, what? And it's interesting to me because at the time I started the business of baking blogging was having this huge resurgence in terms of financials. Like, as in, there was a lot of bloggers making a lot of money doing it as a living. And they were all going down this route of like ads and sponsored posts and all this sort of stuff. Like, in my city, I knew lots of bloggers who were like, you know, car companies were sending them cars to test drive for 6 months. And it wasn't just product. A lot of them were getting paid like an ocean load of money to write reviews or to mention product, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And so naturally, starting out as a blogger in a more commercial space, I'm like, oh, obviously that's the way things are done. And for a solid year, I tried chasing that model down only to kind of eventually throw in the towel going, you know what? I think as an industry, we just kind of don't get it. Like we really don't get it. And I think it has changed to a degree now. Like certainly I see cake makers now who are sponsored by various companies and whatever, but I still think we have a long way to go. And if I can just temporarily climb on my soapbox now, there is a massive resurgence of companies going, oh, we can use cake makers and bloggers and, you know, well-known cake artists, and we can pimp them out for some free product. And I'm kind of over here going like, you know what? Free fondant tastes delicious, but doesn't really feed my children. Mm-hmm. So how about we not do that? And sending someone a coat with your brand slapped all over it and sending them a box of cool stuff, not covering anybody's electricity bills. So
very good.
The good news is that as an industry, I think we are getting better at that whole PR and marketing and, you know, that kind of area. But I think we still have a long way to go. I find it quite appalling, actually, the bigger companies that are sending product and coats and thinking that this now means they own you. Right. Yeah. And they expect you to sign all these sort of crazy agreements, but no money changes hands. And I'm always like, how does that work?
I keep joking that the lucrative world of podcasting will be like when I have a sponsor who will send me to shows or whatever so I can cover them. But I also the other side to that joke is I'm too mouthy. And I use a variety of products. I use what I like. I mean, I'm very on record with saying that I like AmeriColor. They've never sent me anything free. I mean, they were free in Austin cake show goodie bags, but not anything directly to me. I would happily represent that brand because I already do, just because I like it, but they don't need me to because they're AmeriColor.
Yeah, it seems to be quite the trend at the moment to get cake artists on board as ambassadors or artists of excellence or representatives or whatever fancy marketing word you want to use. And the translation to that is they work for free and we send them some free stuff.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
And I'm like,
some of my friends are worked to the bone. I'm not going to name names. There are some friends of mine who, when I go to a cake show now, they can't even stop and say hello because they're working. And I hope they're being paid, but I don't know that they are. And I
can tell you assuredly that the vast majority are not
getting paid. That's my suspicion.
In anything other than product, maybe. Yes. It just look, I think the good news is that brands are starting to realize the power of the people, which is great, but I think we have a long way to go in terms of getting us our recognition. Or as I like to say, you know, people actually die of exposure. But it's really interesting to me that, you know, a few short years ago, I couldn't get anybody to understand this concept of a sponsored post or a blogger doing something for them or whatever. And now you kind of can, but now it's kind of like, how about we just send you some free stuff? And it's like, no, how about you just help me pay my bills? Because that's what I'm working for.
I can horrify you further. So this podcast, obviously, it's small. I mean, we're up to nearly 150 listeners. I mean, it's hard to tell with SoundCloud what the listener numbers are, but it's, you know, I'm going by like how many episodes have had how many downloads, etc. So it's probably about in the 150 range now. But I'm not taking any ad money yet because I'm not offering enough of an audience, right? So I have all these friends who do all these brands and all this marketing. And what I've been saying is, well, guys, I need content. So right now, you can call in for free a marketing message. You can call in an ad. You can call in and leave me a Facebook voicemail for 100% free that says, we have a new mold coming out, or we've got a Kickstarter, or we've got this other thing coming out, or whatever. Because people, as you and I know, because we do podcasts, we listen to podcasts, people go back and listen to old podcasts. So I'm offering a free, permanent ad spot. And some of my friends have taken me up on this. We've done an ad for Mike McCary's classes, and the Composite Mold people came on to talk about their Kickstarter, and so I played that. But I've had other brands actually say to me, well, what's your listenership? And I say, well, it's fairly small, but that's why it's free. Oh, well, okay, we're going to have to think about that. And I'm like, yeah, I understand it's small, but it's growing, and people go back, and it's free, and it literally takes however long it takes you to press the messenger button and call it in. Like it's, I'm not telling you to give me product. I'm not saying I want anything, you know, like just take a minute of your time, read a message.
Basically the whole thing is win-win. And
it is. And they're still going, no, let us know when you have like, you know, 10,000 listeners or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, when I have 10,000 listeners, it won't be free.
Like, and the irony is that then they'll be totally happy to pay for it.
I know. It's ridiculous because I know when I find a new podcast, if I really like it, like one of my favorite podcasts is a parenting one called One Bad Mother. And it's comedy parenting. It makes you feel better about life and parenting and when your kids are driving you crazy, but you still love them, but you really need to rant. Like, it's an awesome podcast. I love it. I cannot recommend it enough for anyone involved with kids in any level. But when I first started listening to it, I was like, I love this so much. I have all these cake projects. I went back to the beginning and listened to 4 years, which was really weird because you go from hearing that they have two kids to now going back and listening to them trying to get pregnant and then their pregnancies and but you know the future. Like, it was this really cool kind of weird mishmash in my head. But I went back and listened to the whole thing. And I know I've got friends who now have, I've turned them onto this podcast and they've gone back and listened to the whole thing. So people do that. So yeah, free permanent advertising. It's like, no, we can't bother to spend a minute. I'm like, well, then. Like,
that's really random. I've never heard of anybody like using free advertising.
Like, free. Like, I'm 100% free. And I make you sound good. Like if you flub it, I edit it. You know, like,
I make you sound good.
Well, that's my mission, is to make people sound good. I'm always, I mean, this is part of what takes me forever for editing, is I edit out a lot of ums and ahs and pauses. And I've learned that I go at the beginning of a lot of my sentences because I edit that out. So if you call a message in, people are like, sometimes people are just nervous to do it. But if you're selling a brand, you shouldn't be nervous to sell your own brand. But like, I make you sound good for free.
You know what, Akim, I'm going to tell you to take you up on this now. I'm going to, like, leave you a messenger voicemail. It's like, hey, it's Michelle. I'm not really advertising anything. I just wanted to have my free spot on Kim's podcast. I am legit going to take you up on this offer and just, like, say nothing. Just be like, hey, I'm taking up my free space because I can.
You can. You can tell. Yeah, I mean, because I've been trying to encourage people to call in, like, you know, their, like, I have a thing on Facebook I call Cake Formations, which is, like, the you can do it. Like, we're all in this together, you know. Put that dragee on that cake because you are awesome, you know, that kind of thing. Or call in your customer rants and I can make it anonymous. And I keep telling people they can call in all that stuff. So, you know, anyone could call any of that stuff in. And when you've got classes coming up, you are more than welcome to call in. I mean, obviously, there's a timeliness factor there. If you've got a class coming up and someone listens to the episode 3 years from now, then it's not as relevant. But, you know, you've got a book. You can call in about your book. Anyone out there listening, if you've got a cake book, leave me a message about your cake book and we'll put it on the air and it's free.
Right. Not going to be free for long, though. just so they know, we got to remind them of this, that someday it's not going to be free.
That's right. Someday it won't be free. That message will forever be free. I'm never going to come back and say, give me money now. But just so, because yeah, sometimes people don't know how this works. So I want to make that clear that I'm not going to come back in 4 years and go, now you have to pay me because I have listeners. No. You have a free permanent message. But if we start hitting thousands of listeners, then it's going to cost a little bit. And then if I hit tens of thousands of listeners, it's going to cost a little bit more. Let's pause the interview for another check-in with Shannon at the Oklahoma Show.
Hi, this is Shannon again, and I'm here with Christy of Christy Cakes at Oklahoma State Sugar Art Show, and I'm going to ask her 5 random questions. Christy, is this your first competition?
This is my first competition.
What do you think?
I think it's wonderful. I've been to the show before, but I've never competed, so I'm interested in seeing what the judges have to say about my stuff.
Yeah. What's your favorite part so far?
Looking at the Grand National wedding.
It's intense, right? Yes. Like, it's so intense.
Very.
Dogs or cats?
Dogs.
Tea or coffee?
Tea.
Fondant or buttercream?
Buttercream.
Okay. That was 5 questions. Thank you for giving me just a few moments of your very exhausted time, I'm sure.
Thank you.
And I'll see you later.
Bye.
Also, what I find really exciting is that as an industry, podcasting is quite new to us too. So mm-hmm. One of the things I find a personal challenge and also kind of exciting is that I often say to people, oh, do you know I have a podcast? And they either say, what's a podcast?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Or they say, yeah, I know what podcasts are, but how do I listen to those?
Yep.
So I actually have a permanent blog post that's on the blog, which is how to listen to podcasts, because I actually think that this is becoming a pretty exciting communication tool industry-wide, but we do need to work on educating people about how they listen to them.
Yep.
And how they actually, subscribe and how they get involved and how they whatever. And maybe this means, because you and I are getting into the ground floor of this, like maybe this means that, I don't know, we'll soon be like the pioneers of podcasting in the cake industry. But it's exciting to me that a bunch of people are like, oh, now that I know you, that you're doing one or whoever's doing one, now I've learned how to listen and I've learned how to download them and I've learned how to whatever. And like, that's kind of exciting too, podcasting is not new, but I think for us as an industry, it is kind of new. So that's pretty exciting as well.
I mean, I've been talking about doing it for some time, but I was waiting for my littlest one to be in full-time school. But then it was clear that there was sort of the need. So I started it, even though she was only in part-time school in the spring. And then all of a sudden it's like, bing, 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 look at all these podcasts popping up. And I'm excited about that because like I'm only putting out an episode every other week. People who are going to sit down and decorate for 4 hours, on an evening or, all day, if it's your all day job, I'm not providing you enough content for that all day. So I'm happy to promote other podcasters in this space. And I think we're all in this together. We can all have a network of podcasters for cake and cookie decorators.
Well, we all have a different point of view as well. Yeah. So like, obviously my one is very business focused, but I like this one's very chatty focused and just kind of fun. So,
right.
you know, different things to listen to at different times is awesome. It's very funny. I've been asked a number of times to turn the book into an audiobook, right? Which I haven't done yet. And every time I'm like, what do you need an audiobook for? And most people are like, because I started listening to your podcast and I feel like you don't produce enough. So if you produce the book as an audiobook, then I can just turn that on. And I have to say, I'd kind of forgotten how much people do work at their bench and or their kitchen table or whatever and listen at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I sort of forgot. But of course, I did that too, right? Except I listened to radio or CDs or whatever was happening at the time. But I've kind of forgotten how much we actually do spend quite a lot of time making with our hands. And so therefore, listening is a really good thing to do while we're doing that, So I have to admit that when I started the podcasting thing, I'm like, man, who's going to make time to listen to this? And then I've realized all those people sitting at their benches at 3 o'clock in the morning, they're making time. Seems to be working so far, right?
Exactly. Or maybe they're on an airplane between cake shows or they're driving between cake shows. We have a lot of time in this industry. Watching is different. Like, I have crafty classes. I like watching YouTube. I can fall down a YouTube rabbit hole of cake decorating videos really easily. Like, that is a really easy way to suck up 4 hours of my day. But, we often don't have time for that. And some people who didn't understand what I was doing at first are like, well, but you're doing an audio only thing about a visual medium. I'm like, yeah, because you're busy. This is for you to listen to while you work. And once I realized I had to overcome that educational hurdle of, I couldn't just put it out there. I had to say, this is what it's for. This is how you can acquire it on this many different platforms. Mm. I've even still had to educate where people say, oh, I missed the episode. I'm like, no, it's up there. You can go back.
You can go back.
It hadn't occurred to me that people thought it was live radio until people were like, oh, I'm so sad I missed it. I'm like, oh, right. Okay. Another point of education I have to do here. You can go. So now my posts always say, remember, you can go back and listen to old episodes and here are the links and you can subscribe on iTunes and it will always come to you. And like people who just aren't in that headspace of podcasts because they are listening to their Spotify or Pandora or whatever. And so it hasn't occurred to them, oh, I could listen to something that's about what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. Yep, for sure. Although full disclosure here, I've known what podcasts are for years and years, but I didn't know. I kind of vaguely understood that they were like a radio show that's just always on, like whenever you want. But I only really learned what they were. Gosh, last December, I actually was chatting to a business advisor and we were chatting about a bunch of other stuff. And halfway through the conversation, she goes, have you ever thought about having a podcast? I'm like, no, not really. I mean, I kind of know what they are. I don't know. Isn't this like people talking? Like, isn't that really boring? And she was like, I think you need to do this. And I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. And like the next day I did a literally like podcasting 101 class. And I was like, wait a minute, I could totally make this a thing. Yeah. And then like 2 weeks later, I was literally the only waiting time was waiting for my microphone to arrive from Amazon.
That's exactly
right. But once it arrived, that's it. I was in. And then I'm like, oh my God, it's like this whole new world has opened up. And now I really enjoy obviously making them, but I really enjoy listening to them as well. And you know, there's so many people talking about so much cool stuff. Travel, parenting, humor, stories. I think it's a wonderful medium. And also, I think to a degree it brings, because you're listening to a voice, it actually brings back a degree of human connection. Mm-hmm. Whereas blogging is lovely, and I have in the fortunate situation where I write exactly as I speak, but not everybody does. And some people find blogging quite challenging, writing quite challenging. So I love the fact that you can hear someone's accent or hear their inflection or hear them laughing at themselves or hear them whatever. And it almost feels a little bit more personal than a traditional blog post does. So I really like it. I'm having fun.
Because this is colloquial. This is casual. And when I edit, because, again, I'm a professional published journalist and author, I've done actual paid copy editing as a job. So sometimes when I'm editing sentences and someone's doing the clause after clause after clause, my editor hat goes on. It's like, this is an awkward sentence, but it's vocal and it works. Mm. And you can follow it because it makes sense, because it is, conversation is different than prose. You know, it's one thing to sit down and read a cake magazine and you read an editorial or you read an encouraging article, whatever it is, you read it step by step. That is actually different in your brain than listening to two people go, and then my cake fell over because I didn't put a steak through the middle, which I totally should have.
One of the happiest bits of feedback I get is that people will say to me, like, I read your article and then I meet you in real life and you sound exactly as I think you would. And I always love that, because I think that kind of tells me that I'm communicating well. And then often people say, and then I met you in real life. And when I go back and I read articles or whatever it is, I can then hear your voice in my head. I'm like, yay, achievement unlocked, you know?
Yep.
No, it just always feels really good when somebody says, I actually get a sense of who you are from what you write. And then being able to hear you just adds to that dimension, you know? I think it's cool.
There was a meme going around in some like podcast fan clubs. It was a picture of someone sitting beside a billboard, and the billboard was showing people having a conversation, and the person who's sitting beside this is acting like they're in the conversation, and someone had memed it on top to say how it feels to listen to the podcast and pretend people are my friends.
That's pretty much it, actually, isn't it? That is totally it. There's a couple of podcasts that I listen to that I think if I knew this person in real life, like, I would have no problem going up to them and being like, hi, and then just launching into like 3 hours of conversation
with them. Yeah.
These people are my friends. They just don't know it yet. It's a little bit like Nigella is my wife and she doesn't know it yet. And Billy Joel's my husband. He doesn't know it yet. But, you know, they're my partners. They're my life partners. They just don't know it.
Yep. My first plan with this, when I was planning things out and being, you know, the tedious planner that I am, the over planner that I am, I had lists of, oh, I'm going to do a segment like this, and I'm going to do a segment like this, and then I'll have this regular recurring thing. And I'd already roped my friend Kyla Myers, who's, you know, she's president of the Cake Club in Austin, so she basically, you know, half runs the Austin show, and so like a lot of people know her. I'm like, I'm gonna have a regular thing. Hey Kyla, will you come on my show regularly when nobody else wants to come talk to me? So like I had all this planned out. My first episode was Dawn Parrott, who's a friend of mine, and I had a list of questions, and after I talked to her for 2 hours, I realized I didn't ask any of these questions. we just talked. And then when I posted it, I thought, well, let's see how this goes. And I asked people, at that time it was like, you know, 30 listeners. I asked the 30 people, I'm like, was this cool or do you want me to be more structured? They're like, no, that was good. Do that more. So now I'm just like, whatever, we're having a chat and podcast because that's what the listeners want. It's like with your cake mix thing. If that's what the end user wants, that's what we will give.
That's what they're going to get. Exactly right. And I think it's actually really important to listen to what they say they want, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like I originally started out going, I'm totally going to be a solo show. And then I was like, I did a couple of episodes on my own. And then I was like, you know what? I'm not that interesting. I mean, I am, but it's solo shows are very, very difficult to produce because you do have to script them to a degree and you need to not ramble and you need to kind of sound interesting or whatever. And I enjoyed doing them, but I went, if I have to do these every week, like this will not work for me. And so I ended up swapping it out to being kind of half solo, half interview. And I think it works a lot better for me personally, but I think it also works better for the listeners because they get a bit of a variation into it, you know? So they're like, oh, yeah, this week's a solo show. Oh, next week we're talking to Mike McCary. Oh, this week we're doing whatever. I think it just works a lot better. I get to interview cool people that I like.
So. Exactly, yeah. I'm roping all my friends into this. When I go to NEC in a few weeks, I'm taking my microphone. And when I had it there at the Austin show, that was like when I was really first launching it. And again, what's a podcast? Wait, hang on. What do we have to do? And I was just like, just talking to my microphone. Later. We'll do that later. And then it was like time to fly back to England and I had like hardly anything. So this you know, in a few weeks when it's NEC, the Cake International NEC, I am just going to take my microphone and go right up to people I know and be like, microphone's on. How you doing? if someone says, no, please don't record me. 100% I will respect that. I have a deep ethical thing and I would never put anyone on the air who doesn't want to be.
Well, so when I'm at NEC, if I see this mad woman running around with a microphone, I will know that that is you.
Oh, are you coming?
And I will run for it. No, I'm joking. I mean, I will be there, but I won't run for it.
Oh, well, I have to find you. I will literally be walking around. I have made myself a microphone carrier, a rainbow strap that I can wear my microphone, but still like shop. Do the things I want to do.
Priorities, Kim, priorities.
That's right. I can still give someone a hug because, well, in Austin, I had the microphone in my pocket and it's got the foam thing on the top and that kept coming off and bouncing across the floor. And I'm like, ugh, can't handle that. So I've literally knitted myself a microphone cozy.
That's actually really cool. Okay. So if I see somebody like down the hallway with a rainbow knitted cozy situation, yeah. I'll be like, oh, look, I know her.
That's me. Yes. Come say hi. Come speak into the microphone. Okay. I thought about making buttons, like, I was like, should I make buttons or badges? Here they call them badges, but you know what I mean? Like a little pin button that would say something like, I talked to eat the evidence, and that you could only get this if you spoke into my microphone. Because that stuff's really cheap in the US, but I priced them here in the UK, and I'm like, ooh, I can't spend £150 to get 70 buttons. That's, oh.
Well, that's like that whole, you know, just to bring this full circle back to cake. That's like that whole, you can't buy the silver cashews, yeah. Or you guys would call them dredgies or whatever, in California. Like, they're illegal in California.
The metallic food coloring that is Australian approved and EU approved, like the Rolchem stuff, which is coming out of South Africa. It's approved in all these other countries, but not FDA approved. But then there are FDA colors, like, okay, AmeriColor in the UK is labeled as craft purposes only. So like,
Okay.
I technically can't use my AmeriColor in a sale cake. Some AmeriColor, this is what makes it even harder. It's not even AmeriColor across the board. It's like, you know, this pinkish tone is craft use only, but this red you can use. Like, what?
Yeah, it's just so confusing.
Yeah, and
you know, you want to do the right thing, but then what is the right thing? You know, it's funny. I went and visited a bakery in Southern California, and she had a whole shelf of these, silver bowls, you know? And I was like, how are you doing that? And she's like, oh, well, there's lots of companies who will happily ship them into California.
Yeah.
And she's like, and I don't have a problem using them. I was like, oh, okay. But technically illegal in the state of California to use those.
Yeah, and it wasn't in Texas, and so people would come to the Austin Cake Show, and people from California would come in Austin and just fill up bags.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, right? It's, you know, here's my thing. Is there somebody actually policing this?
Well, I think it turns into that whole, you could probably get sued. You're taking the risk that if someone wanted to see you.
Somebody whose job it is to, like, you know, make sure nobody's using these things. I always wonder that. Like, yes, you can get sued, you know, no doubt, and do the right thing if you don't want to get sued. But I always kind of think, like, who is wandering around policing? Like, do we not have bigger societal problems than some little mini jawbreakers?
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't even know. I would love to hear if anyone has this, they should call it in. Like, has it ever happened to someone that they were having, a kitchen inspection and failed or got marked down because they had a silver dust color that's technically not FDA approved, or the Dreger sugar pearls, whatever you want to call them. Like, I wonder if that's ever actually happened where someone's been government spanked for having that in the kitchen.
I hope somebody calls and tells us.
I hope someone does. Let's spread the word. I'll put a call out on Facebook too.
I want to know if that, like, caused them any trouble. Yeah. I will say, in a similar vein, that I did meet a woman a couple of weeks ago while I was in the States who actually did get the knock on the door and was shut down for being an unregistered kitchen.
Right. Yeah, that I've heard of happening. Yes.
So, well, I've heard of it happening lots. I've never actually met someone to whom it happened.
Right.
And I actually, like, met her in the flesh, and she's like, oh, no, that was me. Like, they came and knocked on the door, and it was a thing.
Wow. I know of people who were running cake sales in Texas that were shut down before we had a cottage food law. Because
Texas is now, that's all now changed in Texas.
Right, because...
But, yeah, for a while. Texas has issues now with people, like, selling tamales on the side of the road and stuff.
Right.
Texas has a whole bunch of interesting food law issues.
That was part of it, is the people who were really doing all the good, hard, amazing labor that we need to applaud for getting that cottage food law through. Part of what they're pointing out is there's literally a tamale truck on the side of the road, but you're worried because a cake in my kitchen isn't clean enough. But,
They're like people selling tamales, like, out of the back of their car kind of thing. Yeah.
They had the stories of people who had a church bake sale, and because someone called the police had to respond. And, like, who wants to be the cop who comes to a little kid's school bake sale and says, I have to shut this down? Like, who wants to be that guy? No one wants to be that guy.
Wait, no. Let's just rewind. Who wants to be the kind of person who calls the police on a bake sale?
Well, apparently now back to the internet troll. There are people who are just mean. You know, whoever called it in, it's not the bake sale they objected to. They objected to children making noise, or they objected to the church being there, or they had a different agenda. They saw this. They found out they could call the police over it. They called the police over it. The police show up and are like, oh, we're really sorry, but we have to shut this down.
Crazy. Crazy. Yeah. We live in crazy times, right?
Oh my God, that thing you just made? That was amazing. You are so good at this. We just want to do sugar and joy, people. We just want to give people delicious, beautiful, edible art. It doesn't even always have to be beautiful. I have a recipe called Ugly Cake. It is just a vanilla cake with chocolate ganache on it. And I revel after a big show cake. It's like, just feels good to throw ganache on a cake and not care if it's even. Like, you just don't even level. Ugly cake must not be leveled. Ugly cake, you don't clean up any drips on the board. Ugly cake, the celebration of ugly cake was the worst decorating, quote unquote, job you could do after having done, like, a 6-foot show cake. And you're just going to make this cake.
It's like the antidote to the show cake.
That's right. You're making this and you're sticking it in your face and it's good. that's ugly cake. But yeah, so it doesn't even have to be beautiful, but that's all we want. All we want are people to be happy. And so could we all just be happy?
I think sometimes people just make mountains out of molehills, you know? Like, they forget the real reason why things are, you know, like, in that case, they're not thinking about the kids are going to be happy or the church is going to make the money or whatever. They're just thinking about their own agenda and they can't see much past that, you know? Some people have a hard time being like Elsa and letting it go, right?
That's right. Do you know how often I say to my children, guys, don't make me sing the song. And they know that is code for, I will start singing Let It Go.
That's good parenting right there. That was, like, good, excellent training. You know, maybe what we need to do is we need to do this in Facebook cake groups where people start to lose their collective minds over stupid stuff.
We just post Elsa gifts.
Just, like, spam those groups with pictures of Elsa.
That's right. Here's an Elsa gift. Don't make me post audio of me singing that song because you will not like it.
We should turn that into a thing, that when people start losing their minds over stupid stuff, yeah. like, you know, box mix versus not box mix, whatever, we should just be like, right, here are all the Elsa gifts in the world.
That's right.
Anyone... Which, by the way, there are thousands.
Oh, well, of course there are.
We could turn this into a thing.
Or even just, you can put, like, when people, the cake or fake or nods, any of those arguments we should not be having, because they're different spheres, they're all legitimate, everyone's not, we should just say, let it dot dot dot. Don't make me finish this.
Oh, this is it. I'm gonna like go and collect like all the Elsa memes I can find. I'm like, I'm gonna put them in one place and like create a Dropbox link and be like, here you go, guys. Help yourselves. Feel free to use this at any.
I am all down with more sparkle and less hate.
Yeah, you know what? That is a very. We should just yes. That's it.
Yeah.
More glitter. Less carrying on like idiots. Really. The world would be a better place if there's more edible glitter in it. That is probably the one decorating product that I cannot live without. Is like the super sparkly edible pots of glitter, right? And, you know, they have that same problem of being for decorative purposes only or whatever they say on them. And I'm always like, nope, glitter all the things. Just everything looks better with glitter. Glitter, literally glitter everything and your life will be so much better. Boring tuna sandwich, whack some glitter on there. Be amazing.
Oh, don't think I haven't done this to get children to eat. Oh,
imagine
rainbow
if you're,
sprinkles.
Like, eating, like, your morning yogurt with, like, you know, muesli, which basically, like, muesli honestly just tastes like the box it comes in, and then you put some glitter on it.
I now feel it's
like,
magic.
Like, your life would be better.
Yeah.
And then you would poop glitter, and then that would be awesome as well.
That's
so
okay.
It's like
you can
a
be
life
a unicorn.
Cycle of awesomeness.
One of my cake friends is Amelia Carbine, who made those glitter ice cream poop things for the Squatty Potty. Yeah, so all you guys out there, if you know Amelia Carbine, who does cake foo, and you have seen the Squatty Potty commercial, she made the ice creams. You know who made those ice creams, guys.
That's hilarious. See, I feel like if we all ate more of those,
yeah.
that would be excellent.
More unicorn poo, less real poo.
Yes, yes. Well, and I feel like now we need to mic drop on that one. We need to just be like, yep.
Yep.
In conversation, because it was not going to get any better than that.
Well, we could wrap up there because it's been about an hour, so.
I'm not even paying attention to time, but I feel like, is there anything more either of us could contribute to the conversation which would be as profound as that? And the answer is no. More unicorn poop, less real poop.
Less
that
real
is
poop.
The way to go.
But that should be a bumper sticker. We'll have Eat the Evidence bumper stickers, and I'll make all the money, you guys, in the lucrative world of podcasting and bumper stickers. It has to be.
See, and then you could afford the badges.
Then I could afford the, right, because I'm sure the bumper stickers will be cheap.
Oh my God, this is such an idea.
You know what?
Okay.
Also,
I want a double-sided badge. I want on one side for it to say, like, that whole unicorn thing, and on the other side to be a picture of Elsa. So depending on the situation, I could, like, flip it over.
You need to make these. You're the more entrepreneurial one. I'm the lazy one who just muddles through. You're like power businesswoman. You go make that. I give you full life. Go do that. Make money. I will buy one and we'll
okay,
promote
just,
the product.
I just want to know that for sure when I make millions out of this, you're not going to come after me and be like, that was my idea and you copied that from me and I'm the one who invented the drip cake.
I am the least litigious person ever. When I came up with a flexible chocolate thing, I posted the recipe right on the entry because people had told me I should patent it, and it drove me crazy. I'm like, I don't want to be in the business of candy making. I do not want to be in the business of selling product. I cannot think of anything that would ruin my life more than have to... I'm not a business person. I'm just not... That's not who I am. I respect people who are because I know it's a lot of work that I don't want to do. So I put it literally
on
my...
It is a lot of work, actually. It's an enormous amount of work, which I think people don't necessarily always appreciate. That
right.
It is really hard work. And it's not for everyone. You know what I mean? It's not. We've got plenty of people in our industry who truly are doing it for the love of the craft. Yeah. And, you know, yay them if that's the path they want to take. I don't have a problem with it. You know, my only problem with the people who say they're doing it for the love or they're doing it for the industry is those people who then tell me that they have customers. I'm like, so which is it? Is it for the love in the industry or is it for you to make some money? Like, work that out. But yeah, look, there are some people who, you're right, are not entrepreneurial and not whatever. And other people I know who... you know, could sell piping bags by some other name and make $1 billion because they called it something else. So, yeah.
But yeah, people were like,
both.
We can't believe you gave this away. And I'm like, by giving it away, literally I put it on the entry. Like I made the entry itself showed, it was the weirdest cake show. It was a science fair project more than a cake show entry because I don't care. Like I'm just going to do my thing, right? Like I don't care what if you think I'm not doing it quote unquote right. I'm so beyond that. I'm competing at the master's level for reasons. I think I've got my chops. I can do what I want. And so I came to the Austin show with literally on a giant piece of plexiglass, so you could see that it was flexible, like a science fair style display. You can pipe it like this. You can stamp on it like this. You can use it in a lace mold like this. And I had it all laid out. And then on a piece of the flexible chocolate written in edible ink was the recipe. Because my point was, take a picture of this entry and now you can make it too. And all these people were like, you're That's never cool. going to make money. And I'm like, good. Fine.
Sometimes just happy to give stuff away because yep. why not?
And right? I'm not telling other people not to make money. If someone else comes up with a cool idea and they want to make money on it, I am down with that. In fact, Dominic Palazzolo from Marvelous Molds and I were talking about the flexible chocolate. And he says, well, you've just given it away here. And I was like, yep. And he's like, well, because I would consider marketing something like that. I'm like, you have my blessing, sir. If you can find a way to make this shelf stable and marketable, absolutely, I will even promote that product. If you can make this good and not taste awful, be my guest. I will endorse you. You can make all the money. I will never come after you for any of it. Because it's not my thing. But he's a very entrepreneurial. And I like that about him because he makes good stuff that I buy.
Yes, it works out for everybody, right?
Yeah, he made those Flexibets thing. I haven't bought them yet because I'm kind of waiting for them to come NEC and hoping to get a good deal on them. But I've reviewed his product. They did send me some free product. They sent me some shell molds, and I reviewed them for the blog and showed about how you could put the flexible chocolate in them and paint them and came up with all these techniques. So I am so happy for someone else to take that product and do it. So, yeah, if you want to take a product and you want to make more unicorn poop, less real poop on Elsa and drop that, I will advertise your product to all 150 listeners, so you will make all the millions of dollars.
What do you mean I don't need you to advertise it? I'm going to ring up and leave you a message, and that's going to be my free ad, remember?
That's right. You're going to advertise it for free. In fact, you know what? Here's the thing. If you make that, I will never charge you for that ad, even when I have 10,000 listeners. How about that? You can have that one forever. I just want one, and I don't want to have to make it.
I will absolutely make that happen.
Awesome.
Right.
That's a
challenge. Before I get to NEC, which just quietly is a 24-hour flying time from here to there.
Oh, God, yeah.
I will come up with a way to make this happen.
Yeah. What could possibly go wrong?
So many things. But I'm going to slap some glitter on it, and it's going to be all right. Well, gorgeous Kim, I will see you at NEC in a few weeks.
Yes.
And I am going to have to shortly level you and leave you because it's 10 p.m. here in Australia. And I have some kids who are like, are you going to say goodnight to us at some point or what?
But you better do it with good cake.
You know.
They're snobs, so you have to
do it. Well, you know, I don't know if you're aware of this, but I'm actually a mom to triplets. And one of the kind of bittersweet things about that is that it's gorgeous that they're all growing up at once. And that's really exciting. But the hard part of that is I'm keenly aware of the fact that, you know, once they grow up and don't want to see me anymore and don't want any hugs and kisses and cuddles anymore, there's no younger kids onto whom I can lavish my attention.
Yeah.
So if at age 16 they still want to cuddle goodnight, I am there.
Yes.
So I'm like, as every day goes by, you guys hate your mother more, which is not true. They don't hate me, but, you know, they grow up, they move on.
Yeah, I've got a 12-year-old and a 4-year-old. I'm seeing both sides of that coin right now. The 12-year-old's like, no, I don't want a hug. And the little one's like, come sit with me. Yeah, so, yeah.
Exactly. And both are equally kind of slightly irritating, right?
Yes. Yes.
Well, so but I'm keenly aware that they've gone like, Mom, come say goodnight. I'm like, okay, I'm totally there. I'm going to say goodnight right now. So I am going to love you and leave you and say that when I see you at NEC and I have my Elsa button on, thanks for hanging out with me.
Yes, thank you for coming on.
Me, be on your podcast and pretty much just like shoot the breeze.
Yep, and I will put in the show notes all the links to your sites and your podcast and all that stuff, because there's more podcast goodies, guys.
Yay!
Yay! Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Here's Shannon one more time with the great Julia Usher at the Oklahoma Show.
This is Shannon here with Eat the Evidence podcast, filling in for Kim Chapman, who's still in the UK. I'm with Julia Usher, the Julia Usher, and it's very exciting to be here at the Oklahoma State Sugar Arts Show. What do you think of everything?
It's spectacular. The show is incredible. We had a massive number of entries to the cookie division, as you know, more competitive than ever, and it's always a huge inspiration to me to see what people bring.
Yeah, there's a good variety of different huge things variety. Out there. Yeah, you had some 3D cookies and like 2D cookies and just all sorts of stuff. Was it really tough to judge everything?
It's absolutely tough to judge, especially as we were talking about earlier, when things, people conceptualize the same set of rules in very different ways. So some people might come in with a massive three-dimensional sculpture, and others take the rules more literally and come in with 12 cookies. Mm-hmm. So trying to make comparisons across very different concepts is sometimes hard. However, we have a set of criteria that we apply, and we try to apply as systematically as possible. So we had 5 this year that ranged from the number of techniques used through to the quality with which those techniques were applied through to like sort of overall design appeal.
Yeah.
We assigned points to each one. Mm-hmm. We tallied them all up. Then we got together as a group. We had 4 judges.
Wow, 4.
And compared and contrasted our numerical responses to make sure that they really were in line with how we felt.
Checks and balances.
Yes, and every judge comes at it with a different viewpoint. So, you know, I'm a cookie decorator. Others were cake decorators. Some have expertise in painting. Some don't. Mm-hmm. So it's good, I think, always to get a mixture of views on pieces.
Yeah.
Because as diverse as the pieces are, the judges are diverse as well. No. Judging is always subjective, but we try to take as much of that out of the process as possible.
What is one of your favorite parts of the competition besides the cookies?
Oh, of the entire show?
Yeah.
I think just coming here and seeing people I haven't seen in a while, in all honesty.
Yeah,
I work in my basement, like, holed up in my basement. That's where my... It's dark. It's kind of, you know, it's messy.
Yeah.
I talk to myself.
Yeah.
So it's nice to get out and see real life people. Honestly, I crave it.
And so
that's the best part.
I think that's what a lot of people go through. This is like, we only just make cakes just to come here to talk to people because we don't get to.
And I have different angles on, you know, I do different things. So I have different people I know in different spheres. So, you know, I know the vendors here because I sit next to them at shows, but I also know Cookie Decorative Connection, or I know people that also do classes. So we have different things in common that we talk about. It's really nice.
Speaking of classes, are you ever going to do any here in the... I know you go abroad a lot.
I go abroad a lot simply because there isn't really the demand to do them
I'm
here.
I'm demanding.
In the way I like to do them. So normally, I don't like to host and organize them myself because there's a lot of administrative stuff involved with that. So I prefer when I have a host that's willing to kind of do all that for me.
You know, Jenny with the Creative Cookie, she's got the rehab house.
Yeah,
she
can
totally go out there.
Yeah, I've done a rehab with her recently, actually.
I'm doing one with her next month.
And, I taught with them when they were in Kansas City recently.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so that was really fun. So normally I try to find a host that'll pay travel, a whole hotel accommodations, and also pay my teaching fee.
Okay.
The thing with that setup is I don't get paid a teaching fee.
Uh-huh.
So I have to make it worth my while to travel.
Right.
And there's just happens to be a much bigger demand for that type of course setup almost everywhere else in the world than
I noticed, like, on Cookie Connection, almost all of the, like, really intense creative artwork on the cookies come from all over the world, and it's just like, I'm like, somebody teach us here.
No, I mean, I think we have amazing talent here. It's not what I was saying. Like,
there's a massive
amount of talent to learn from here. What we don't have as much of are formal venues that are designed around bringing instructors, paying them, doing the classes. Most of the classes here seem to occur in formats of shows like this or SoFlow, where you, the instructor, pay the fee to get there, organize the whole class, take the fees, and teach the class. And I just really want to focus on the teaching aspect of it and the creating aspect of it.
Right.
And strip all the rest away and still make some money, you know, and not have me be completely at risk. You know, those forms of classes seem to be offered. I have a lot of demand in China, Asia, South America, and Europe, to a lesser extent for me personally, for whatever reason. But very little here. I do have some upcoming classes. I have one at Wilton in October at their headquarters near Chicago, and also one that will be happening at a cakes decorating school in New Jersey.
Julia has all this awesome stuff coming out, and she's going to explain it to us again because she is just wonderful like that. So please.
Okay, so as you people may or may not know, I already have a stencil line. It consists of layered sets, 5 stencil sets that create these, I call them prettier plaques, create really nice message cookies, and they can be mixed and matched across sets, etc. By the end of the year, we're going to be introducing a few new stencil concepts, slightly simpler probably, but still layered.
Mm-hmm.
They're still under development, so they're going to remain a mystery for now. But more importantly, I've been working for about a year on a new airbrush, which I think is, there are a lot of good cookie decorating airbrushes out there, but I think it represents an advancement over what is there even so. In a couple of ways. First, it's a dual action airbrush, so I get more control because I'm controlling both airflow I'm a control freak. So that's control good.
Freak. Cookie or control freak just doesn't go together. No, I would never expect that ever. Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So I'm more controlled because I get to control both airflow and coloring flow at the same time in two actions, which are more or less a continuous motion. Big coloring cup, which I like because I don't.
Big.
It's big. I can do cakes with it. I can do cookies with it. It doesn't spill out because I operate it in a 90-degree angle to the cookies. So in the small cups, the coloring almost invariably comes out, and it's super easy to clean. I can clean it all without taking it apart. So I think people will be thrilled with that aspect of it, especially.
That's a nightmare. Like trying to take those things apart and putting them back together. No. That has brought me to tears before, literally.
That won't happen.
Yeah. So that's nice. That's really good. Because there's things I want to do and things I just don't want to do. And taking those things apart is not one of them. And tweezers and all the stuff involved.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you won't find any tools that come with it. Because actually, all my routine cleaning I do without taking it apart. If you should forget to do that and let coloring dry in it, then you might have to take elements of it apart. But you can take the needle out completely from the handle end without removing the handle, without taking the trigger out. And then you can clean the nozzle end just by unscrewing it with your fingertips, no tools or anything like that.
Yeah.
So I really focus on just those areas of the airbrush that actually make contact with coloring. Like, there's really no reason to take it all apart and soak it, because like half the gun never makes contact with food coloring.
Yay. That's awesome. And like I was saying, that it's really sleek looking. It looks really nice. Doesn't look like it takes up a lot of room.
No, it's that teal is pretty slick as well.
Yeah. But, well, you can do teal and brown. They go together very well. So it works. Okay, well, I just want to thank you again so much. It was so great meeting you. You're a really lovely person. Like,
and you as well. Yeah, so glad to finally meet you. We've just been crossing paths for forever online.
I know. And like, one day I'm going to meet her, I swear. And here you are. And it's fabulous. And I'm totally going to get a cookie. So thank you again.
Thank
and enjoy
you.
The show. And I will make sure Kim is probably going to be so ecstatic. She's also a huge fan of yours.
Oh,
so,
you.
All right. Have a good one.
Talk to you soon.
This has been the Eat the Evidence podcast. A warm thanks to all of my contributors, and you can find out more about them and the things discussed on today's episode in the show notes by visiting the podcast section of the Eat the Evidence website, eat-the-evidence.com/podcast. There, you'll find social media links, as well as links to iTunes, Stitcher, and other places where you can subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. I've also posted detailed instructions on how to leave me a Facebook voicemail message and other options to call into the show. Please do feel free at any time to call in your very own cake formation, funny story, talk about a challenge you're having or have recently overcome, or rant about something driving you crazy. And if you like the show, please post a review on iTunes and share it with all of your sugar artist friends. This show was produced and edited by me, Kimberly Chapman. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, you are an amazing artist, and everyone involved with this podcast supports you. You can do it! Until next time, bye-bye, and good luck with whatever you're working on. Unicorn poo, less real poo.